Welcome to the E-commerce Made Simple podcast. I'm Jérôme de Guigné, your host today. And we will be talking today about brand story. And like, it's super important, Joël, when you want to sell a product, that you have a story to say. Like, you know, a picture says more than a million words, right? And today, Sasha, she really helps brands build a big story. And you know, as a community manager and someone who's very well, who knows a lot on social media, that okay, telling a story and speaking around a bit the product is what makes it, you know, interesting for people.
I think it's all about, as far as I'm concerned, you know, and I am still very much a layman, but I think it's about getting people involved, making them feel like they've got a stake in it, even if it's not a financial, well, yeah, maybe a financial stake when they're buying something, but also like a personal state and then a loyalty to that. And I think if you can tell a story and it's not just a big corporation in the middle of nowhere, but there was a couple of guys who set this up from a van in, I don't know, you know, some deepest, darkest corner of London or whatever. If you can tell that story, it's just more to talk about. I mean, you know, I think Ben and Jerry are long dead, but it's Ben and Jerry's has still got that aura around them, and that is the story of what they did in, you know, a pair of hippies in the early 70s. So I think that it's interesting to have those things and those stories as well. As it humanizes companies, I think.
Yeah, and as it's connecting the customer at the emotional level and not at the only level, so it's getting a bit lower and into his heart or his guts and talking to that part rather than only I have a price and a benefit. It's like the story is like Ben and Jerry. Okay, you see two guys, you know, doing their ice cream, obviously, rather than having, you know, one brand and you have no emotions. And Sasha is really great to get us around that saying, is like any brand can work on their, like, bringing out the emotions and linking to people on something a bit more than the product itself. And therefore, for any brand, which is specifically on e-commerce, when, you know, your product has to sell itself, you need to bring that story, like who bought it there, who did, you know, what, why it came from, like, ah, yes, I was on my own, I tried to solve a problem, or I had a kid, and, you know, all those things bring a lot of purpose and you know, flesh to the bone, let's say. So enjoy it. You'll get a lot of tips on creating your own brand story, and this will be a key to be successful on Amazon. So enjoy the show. So welcome everyone to this e-commerce webinar on E-commerce Made Simple. Today I'm super happy to have Sasha and to talk about how important it is to build a brand, specifically, well, in general, right? But specifically, yeah, in e-commerce, and you'll understand why in our session today. I think we've known each other, Sasha, for a long time as people talking around Amazon. I think in our old life where we were traveling, we met several times on several conferences. So yeah. I've always had pleasure to talk with Sasha. And for those who know about our webinars, we always start with a fun fact. So I asked Sasha to work on a fun fact. She had loads, she told me. So go, you know, what's your fun fact, Sasha?
Okay, so I mean, like I told you, it was really hard to choose a fun fact, but this one's really fun. And that is, in the middle of the day, I will randomly do handstands around my house because it gets, you know, it gets the inspiration flowing. I actually used to be a gymnast before I had my children. And so it's still with me. I still try and keep fit. So if I put the kettle on, I'm doing push-ups, or if I just need a break, I'm doing handstands around my house or cartwheels. So yeah, never growing old.
Well done. So to first tip to build a brand is do push-ups when you get the kettle on. So, okay, that's my learning for me. Thanks, Sasha. So maybe you can talk a bit about, on a more serious note, who you are and what
exactly
you do.
Exactly, more serious stuff. Okay, so I have been working with Amazon sellers for about 5 years now. And I started off mostly just doing the listings, And slowly as time went on and more sellers started getting access to the A+ and the EBC content, that was when people really started to realize that they needed to have a strong brand and they really needed something that would help them differentiate from other similar products in the marketplace. And so obviously, as time goes on as well, more and more sellers, as they grow their business, realize they need to diversify and also open up other channels, which means that they're building Shopify sites. It means they're running Facebook ads. It means they're, you know, they've got Instagram accounts and different social media stuff going on. And with all that being said, you really need to have a good foundation for your brand. And that's what I started helping my clients with. And it's something I started seeing a long time ago, actually, but I think it took sellers a long time to kind of understand just how valuable that is for your brand. What you see on Amazon especially is that there are brands who can get a lot of sales at first by pumping a lot of money into PPC and all this kind of stuff, but the brands that kind of stick around for the long term are the ones that put a lot of thought into their photography style, into their copywriting, into everything that they're doing, basically. So it's definitely a long-term strategy. Yeah,
it's very much so. For me, the main KPI on Amazon is conversion rate, and conversion rate is how convincing is your content to the people coming to your page, and it's down to what you mentioned. And so, if your conversion is not working, actually you're throwing money out of the window if you're doing advertising. So I think it's for me, the topic is really super interesting. And when we prepared, you mentioned about this foundation. So what do you mean by foundation? It's like, what are the foundations of a brand story, let's say?
Right. So exactly. That's a great question. It's like brand story. Everyone hears this word thrown around all the time in marketing. It's like the new buzzword of marketing. Oh, you have to have a brand story. You have to have a brand story. But people are confused. Where do I even start? How do I find my brand story? And now Amazon even offers you the option to sort of add this background about your brand. And I feel like people are confused about where to start and how to even find it. So that's the foundation, is that you need to be kind of asking yourself questions before you start your brand story. Stuff like, you know, why did I start this business? Like, what value do I want to bring to my customers? How do I want to position myself in the market? You know, if there's some similar products going on, like, how are you going to position yourself so you'll stand out differently? And all these kind of questions that you need to ask yourself, and you can write them down, obviously. And then from there, that's where you're going to build out this brand story. Now, some companies have an easier time with this because there are some products that just naturally kind of have a story behind them. Sometimes it's just, you know, sellers, though, sometimes they have products that they chose because they thought it was a good product to sell. And then coming up with the brand story is a lot harder because there's no sort of personal connection to it. But having said that, I think that some brands make the mistake of just focusing on the founder of their business and saying, oh, you know, so-and-so, like, let's say, Jerome, you know, he decided to start his e-commerce business in 2015, and then it grew from there, and he grew it into an 8-figure agency. So no one really wants to hear that because it doesn't connect to them. You know, it's like, oh, well, good for him. You know, he's making tons of money, but what about me? You know, that's what people are looking for as well. So origin stories and stories about founders can be interesting as long as they connect and resonate with your audience as well. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of things to think about when you're coming up with a brand story. But one of the most important things is definitely keeping it customer centric and focused on how it kind of brings value to your customers.
I think it's a super insight. And like lately, we've started to do advertising on Google, Facebook, also on top of doing advertising on Amazon. What we've realized is when you talk to people who've got experience doing advertising on those other platforms, it's that actually there's an enormous work about, okay, who's my customer? What's a persona, basically? Who are they? What's their age and so on? And what we've realized is that people typically on Amazon, they launch a brand and I have a great product and okay, put good pictures and I did some advertising and like because the keyword searching is so powerful because someone is looking for a baby product and poo, and he finds it, it's good review and it sells. But like the brands didn't even think, okay, do I need to think about where's my customer, where he lives, what his style and everything? So, and whereas people were doing advertising on Google because it's so big, it's more complex, right, than the Amazon one, they would say, no, we can't test everything. We need to know where we start, right? Who's that? And
I feel on this story about advertising is also very true for a bit the story behind it and to whom you're talking to. So is there an element of understanding who your customer is also to telling your story? And that most of the time with Amazon, you didn't need to do it maybe before and now more and more. Is that
right? 100%. So actually I have an interesting example. So once you really know who your customer is, you can craft your entire photography listing, everything around that customer and the story itself. So I actually came across a very interesting example. There was these wipes. They're like disposable wipes for adults that you can throw in the toilet afterwards, you know. And there's probably like hundreds of different like brands that sell these kind of wipes. And this specific product called themselves, if I'm not mistaken, what do they call themselves? Commando wipes or something. But they made it specifically geared towards people who are in the outdoors. And everything in their listing talks about, oh, when you've been at the campsite for 3 days and you feel disgusting and you're stinky, you're going to want to use our wipes. And they named each of their series, because they had one that was geared towards women and one for men. And they named them like these very kind of rough, you know, rugged type of names that really attracted those kind of outdoorsy people. There's nothing different about the product. It's exactly the same as any other wipe on the marketplace. But they've highlighted these features that really speak to someone who's spending time outdoors, which is biodegradable because you don't want to leave, you know, any waste or rubbish behind you when you're outdoors. And, you know, it's good for helping you feel clean when you're traveling and hiking and all that kind of stuff. So they're not talking to these, like, let's say upper class women or something that travel on an airplane in first class. They know who they're talking to, and they made everything about their customer. So it's just really interesting how you can really drill down and use that to your advantage. And I'll tell you what, Jerome, I think people are afraid to do that sometimes because they're afraid if they pick one specific audience, they're going to miss out on all these sales from other people. But I don't think that's true. I think people really need to not be afraid to take that risk, and they really should really speak to one specific audience and solve their problems. Yeah.
And for me, the best image is when you're looking for a job, actually, the experience, or when you're starting as a consultant. And you say, oh, I know so many things, you know, I've worked for 20 years, so I know everything. But you don't want to give work to someone who knows everything. Like, you know, yeah, you know everything, but I have a problem which is specific. Whereas if you say, you know, I'm an Amazon expert, yeah, do you have an Amazon problem? Oh, yes. So, okay, I'll take your problem. But I'm an Amazon expert. Yeah, but I have a logistics problem on something else. Could you help? Oh, yeah, because actually logistics. So it's, for me, it's exactly the same thing of, you need to be very precise about what's your DNA and like the why you're there. Define the start with the why from Simon Sinek. It's like, okay, that's super important. And like when you're working with brands, how do you, so when you find the brands like probably don't have that strong brand story, how do you sort of work with them to get them to work on it? Do you have some tips or say, okay, what should you do to work on that?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the main tips is really, I think, talking, if you have it available. For new brands, this is an issue actually. But if you can talk to your customers and really find out from them what they're experiencing, what are their pain points, how can you transform their lives, you know? Those kind of things that you should be asking your customers, or asking potential customers if you're a new brand, you obviously don't have access to that kind of information. But if you do, then definitely, I think a lot of brand owners assume that they already know. I mean, some people do know. They come with a purpose and they do have that purpose in mind. But it's trying to come up with an idea that's just, it's bigger than just the product that you're selling online. So I have to think of an example, but I can't really give examples of brands I've worked with because some of them are, you know, still in like the private type of level before launch. But yeah, just trying to come up with a bigger idea, something deeper, something like a deeper benefit than just the actual product and what it does for the person. Like if there's a way that, I'll give an example of a brand, like, you know, obviously, we all talk about Nike, but what they did is they said they want to bring innovation and inspiration to every athlete. They didn't mention once anything about the running shoes that they provide for their customers. They don't mention the t-shirts and the swimsuits and all the different products. it's nothing to do with that. It's this like big, you know, idea that people somehow can believe in, you know? So that's what we want to be doing when you're coming up with your brand story, is coming up with some big idea that people can really connect with and really believe in and feel a part of as well. Because I think nowadays with consumers, the landscape is really changing. Some things obviously people still buy as commodities and they don't really care about the brand they're buying from, you know, but some people really do care deeply about the brands that they buy from, and they want to know that it aligns with their values, and it's something that they can really, you know, get behind and believe in as well.
And like, do you have things which you would recommend not to do, or like big failures of things which, you know, people wanting to inspire but not inspiring, or things you typically recommend not to do? Or...
Yeah, so I would definitely say, like, whatever you decide your big idea or your purpose is, it has to be completely authentic, because if you start making mistakes, it just looks bad. It just looks hypocritical. And even big brands have made mistakes. For instance, I'll give an example, like Dove, which is owned by Unilever. They had this whole campaign about acceptance and different skin colors and everything like that. Meanwhile, in India, they launched a brand that was a skin whitening product. And it was just so clearly racist, and it so didn't align with their brand values. It was like what? And then they had to apologize for it and different things. Like, and there's big brands that have made this mistake also. It's like, so if you choose a big why, if you have this brand story, that is actually going to be your compass. It's going to be your true north. It's going to be what's guiding you for all the rest of the decisions and all the products that you're launching in future, because it kind of keeps you on this, you know who you are, you know what you're about. So you're not going to start randomly making decisions that don't align with what you decided your brand is about. So it really keeps you on a good, I think, trajectory and a good path forward. But yeah, so one of the things is definitely has to be authentic. Like, don't come up with something that's going to be impossible for you to kind of, like, don't say, oh, we're into eco-friendly and saving the planet. And then you send, I've seen brands do this. They write on their listing, oh, we love the planet and blah, blah, blah. Then they send a product that has like three layers of plastic packaging on it. So that's just not authentic. Yeah. So I actually have a client that I work with, and he says he's all about eco-friendly and using earth, you know, renewable resources. And he sends all his products in literally the most simple cardboard box that you've ever seen. Just really simple, with just one name printed on it, which is his brand name. No other messaging inserts, no fancy packaging, nothing, because that's true to him. And that's true to his story. So whatever it is, it has to be authentic, and you really have to understand how it can impact different decisions that you make along the way. Yeah.
And I think that's before we go into the maybe more operationally what that means, do you have like numbers which show a bit, or experiences you can share where, okay, you start from, okay, having a product and just displaying the benefits to having a product with a brand story and with inspiration of, you know, what it could bring. Do you have some things you can share? Because intuitively we could say, yeah, sounds makes sense and that right. should, but do you have some numbers to put behind it, basically?
We have someone asking a question. One second. What did they say? Something about Apple. Hang on. Okay, interesting. Ah, okay.
So... yes.
Comment. Okay.
Yeah, that the fact that Apple did a bit the same, and that all larger brands, thanks to me, saying, you know, having a claim, and sometimes, and the larger you are, to be fair, the more difficult it is. And one is, for example, Amazon. We work always as Amazon is like having a lot of claims, but in the real life, a lot of people are challenging that. And
right.
the fact that Jeff Bezos just said when he's leaving Letter, okay, I want to be the most employee-centric company in the world, and that you have a lot of like reports and people complaining about how they have to work right. so much and can't even go to the bathroom and things like that. So right. it's true. You need, it's like, how do you deliver that big vision and you live to it? For large companies, it's very complicated. It's
definitely more challenging. Yeah.
For sellers, it should be easier, but you're right. Like the example of cardboard and like one thing, eco-friendly is super hype, but it's like, you need to live it, right?
Yeah, live exactly. You have to live it. Yeah.
But back to my question. Yeah.
About numbers, basically, of how it can, of how, I guess, having the brand story is really impacting. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, I mean, definitely, like, people are 22 times, apparently, more likely to remember your story than just a basic benefit sort of centered listing. But the thing is with storytelling in listing, so actually it's a good question what you asked, because I'm going to go back a little bit, but when people say brand story, they think of it as something very static. Oh, I have my brand story and that's it. But what we really need to look at is the different touch points of where your customers are meeting your brand. So it could be through email campaigns, it could be your Amazon listing, it could be the packaging itself has a story on it, it could be social media. So all of those places are going to kind of have different aspects of your brand story. And I like to call it brand storytelling. So you're using every opportunity you can to tell a story. And it's not a story that has like a beginning, a middle, and an end necessarily, but it is like, you know, sort of a short inspirational text or something that people can like, you know, that connect with and believe in and stuff like that. So on the listing itself, yes. So numbers wise, I can't tell you exact numbers of how it can increase sales. I wouldn't know how to check that. But I have seen some really great examples of brands who, like there's one on Amazon, they're called Sunbum. It's a really funny brand, but they sell sunscreen and their slogan is trust the bum. And it's so easy to remember. And they have this great monkey character on their listings, and it's on their packaging and it's on their listings. And this monkey is part of their story. So, and people recognize that because they keep seeing it over and over again on the packaging, on the actual outside of the sunscreen products. And then the brand story is that they were just people who loved surfing and being on the beach. And then they realized they didn't like the existing sunscreens. And so then they developed sunscreens for themselves, and they were like, well, this is how we like to make them, and we hope you like them too. And I liked it because it's got this like, it's kind of like a chutzpah, that's what we say in Hebrew, or in Yiddish actually, but it's like a cheeky way of like having a brand story. It's like, well, we made these products for ourselves and we spend all the time on the beach and we're kind of like the beach bum, so trust us. And what I love about this brand is that they also do Amazon posts, and all their pictures are so not polished. They're like totally like chilled pictures with people with sand in their hair, and like it's like someone just took it with their best friends and like posted it on social media. There's nothing, it's so real. That's the thing, they live and they breathe the beach, and that's what comes through in their brand story, and it's in their EBC content. And they don't go into all the details of all the ingredients that's in their products and whether it's eco-friendly or any of those things. They literally just make you believe in the sunbum, and that you like, you just want to go to the beach the second you see their pictures. You're like, oh, I want to be there. I want to be those cool people surfing and like playing in a band outdoors and all that kind of stuff. So if you can create that, then I think you're winning. Yeah.
That's certainly engaging. I already want to go and see those sunbumps. Obviously I'm already like liking the brand without even seeing it. So exactly. Yeah, it was only the name and what you're describing. Now, picking on one of the things you mentioned is like Amazon posts, which are only working in the US for now. What's your experience with that? Because that's an element of telling the brand, the story of your brand is one of the medias, let's say. What's your experience with that? Is that working well? Do you have?
So I don't have that many clients that are using it, but I do think it's free, so why not use it? Why not build up some more like brand equity and see what you can do with it? And you can really, it doesn't have to be overly complex. You can literally, if you're posting on social media anyway, if you're posting on Facebook and on Instagram and wherever else, TikTok is becoming a big thing now, but you can use those same content and just repurpose it for Amazon and use it on posts and see what happens, you know? That's what I always say, like always be testing, always try out new things. And see what sticks. If it's not working and you don't see any difference, so then don't waste time on these things, but you know, see if you can get some traction with it. Definitely. One of the things I was going to say about brand stories also is emotional connection. Like if you can make people feel like what I did to you just now with the whole beach story is really good, having a character. So this company had that big gorilla monkey guy as their character, but some pet companies do this where they bring in someone's pet and they say, this is, I don't know, let's call her Betsy, whatever her name is, but you know, bring in the dog of the company and have a character or even a person that people can really connect to, or come up with something imaginary that just makes people laugh or it's memorable, you know?
Yeah, so basically, you're inviting every brands to sit down and dream a bit, right? Or see how they can make their customer dream, because that will have a huge impact on the conversion. And it's true that Amazon is one of those e-tailers, which understood very quickly that, okay, you need to add the content and that their platform, they were making, empowering brands to put their own content themselves. Because when I started like working with e-tailers, a lot of the other e-tailers said, no, send me the content, I'll put it there. And Amazon was one of the first one to give that, enable that. And they've understood, okay, the power of brands putting themselves there and explaining themselves. And one thing which is interesting is I was looking at Amazon Live the other day, and it's starting to get big in the US, and a lot of the content is, I would say, not of a very high quality in terms of really branding, but it's like people just in their kitchen and talking about the product. It's not specifically brands, but I think people love the authenticity of it, and that to your point about being authentic, that is very
100%. Yeah. I was going to tell another story, actually. I was speaking to someone and he was like, Sasha, can you help me? He's selling a cream. I can't say exactly what cream, but let's just say it was for mosquitoes. And there's literally, I don't know, 100 different brands selling mosquito cream for mosquito bites. Let's say it was that. And he's like, can you help me differentiate? So I'm like, well, first of all, you have in your listing that it's for adults and babies, which maybe it works for adults and babies. But as a mom, if I was buying something specifically for my baby, I wouldn't feel so comfortable buying something that was also for adults. I said, that's the first thing. And then I said the second thing. I said, "What? How did you come up with this formula?" So he starts telling me how his parents were both doctors in India, and they studied under this guru who taught them how to use these herbs. And I said to him, and then this guru died and they basically continued his legacy. And I said, why is this not in your listing? I'm like, this is the coolest story ever. We need to like put this guru like on all of your branding. Like we need to have him as the character. And that was just like, I was so shocked that he didn't put any of that into the listing. I guess he didn't think it was important, but sometimes I think telling stories that we've experiences or things like that people can really connect to is super interesting.
And you're right. I, as a customer, it's like sometimes I get a feeling that those stories are crafted, or like this is not real, and that's got the worst counter effects. Like I'm trying to be sold something which doesn't exist. If it's a true story, and we have a potty brand actually from a UK potty brand, and it's really the story of the mum like having a problem and carrying potties, and like this story is, that's already the story of the brand. It's like, okay, I had this problem, I sold it, and I thought, okay, it should be fun for the kids, and she came with this story, and wow, that's super powerful. And the difference between two brands, and we're having that discussion with a lot of our customers, is like the difference between two brands is most of the time is a story. It's like, to build your brand, if you have no story, no funding for advertising, nothing, it's very difficult.
I thought of an example like I read about in one of these marketing books, but at the time when Pampers and Huggies were really going head to head for getting customers. So Pampers kept going on about how their nappies, their diapers keep babies dry for longer. And they kept pushing this because that's what their data analysts, that's what their researchers told them, that's your differentiator, that's your USP, you know, your Pampers keep babies dry for longer. And they weren't getting more sales, they weren't getting any more traction, and Huggies was just going up. So then they went back and they said, what do mothers really want? And what did mothers really want? They wanted someone to help them along each milestone and help them with the development of their baby. And now if you go on the Pampers website, you'll see it's all about baby's developmental milestones and giving moms advice and parenting tips and sleep instruction tips and all this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden their sales exploded because moms felt, oh, this brand actually understands me, actually understands the struggles I'm going through, and is helping me. And yeah, okay, they keep my baby dry for longer, but that wasn't what really, you know, turned the light bulb on for these moms who are buying the product.
Exactly. So, and that's a great example. And I think for everyone now, if you have any questions for your own brands, I think it's a good, I think Sasha would love to go into it. And I have the first question for you, Sasha, from one of the attendees is, we are a nursery manufacturer and are trying to stand out from other well-known nursery furniture brands. Mm-hmm.
How would be best to go about this? We have been around for 25 years and are emerging into the market, but want to be as well recognized and unique as the likes of Mamas and Papas and Tutti Bambini.
Okay.
I didn't know those brands, but okay, let's.
I know Mamas and Papas. Yeah, they're very famous.
Big brands.
Brand.
That's marketing is, yeah, last sentence, sorry. Marketing is relatively new to the business and have started to utilize Google Ads, social media, and Amazon A+. So, okay. Case study for you, real life.
I mean, it's hard for me to see because I can't see their brand exactly, but I would tell them, first of all, to kind of go back to like, when they first started the business, you know, like what was the reason that they started it? And, you know, why, like, what was their vision? That's what they should be asking themselves also. Like, what was the vision that they had when they started? Now, it's also, I'll tell you what's very important that I think a lot of brands don't focus on at the, like, maybe they've been around for 25 years, but there's a personality to every brand. I almost think that brands are kind of like human beings, and you meet someone who's very boring and doesn't have a lot to say. You don't want to really hang out with them, you know? But I think if you figure out what your brand personality is, so there's actually 12 archetypes that lots of brands use. You don't have to, you can also blend some archetypes together, but they're like the magician, there's the caretaker, there's the hero brand, there's the creator, there's the adventurer. So basically these are like personalities of the brand. So most, I would say, like nursery brands are probably in the caretaker category, where they come across as very caring and stuff like that. So if you want to like mix things up and really stand out, it's possible that you could really utilize a different brand personality to position yourself differently from other ones in the marketplace. But what I would say is if they're getting sales and if things are working, so, and they've been around for 25 years, they should really start conducting customer interviews as well, and see what kind of reasons, like why people have bought there from their brand in the first place, why they trust them, and then start using those things in their new marketing strategy. Because if they've been around for 25 years, they're obviously doing something right. They're obviously doing, you know, well, because their businesses don't last for 25 years if they aren't doing it, you know, anything right. So look at that, look at the history, look at the vision of why they started the company, look at where they want to go to, what point, you know, where do you want to be? Like they said, they want to be on the same level as Mamas and Papas and all these different brands. So also take a look at the competitors, do an analysis of what they're doing and see how they're connecting with their audience and see what their customers are kind of, sign up for their emails and see what kind of emails they're sending out to their customers. And then you can really have a look and see how you can do it better than them. Yeah. That's what I would say off the cuff without looking at any of their branding. Yeah,
was more of yourself and more dreaming or more inspiration than they would do. Probably they have more, because if when you're a 25 years old company, right, you've got probably lots of stories, lots of customers you've delighted, lots of things you can probably reuse, even if it was not your focus, because a lot of manufacturer were not going to the market, so they were sort of not wanting to see too much the market because it's a lot of information, and now they're opening. So it's true that it's a new way of looking at it. One additional tip I would probably add is that you can look at reviews on Amazon. It's like reviews is, you have your customers talk
it's
to you.
Amazing.
So
it's right there.
Go to Mamas and Papas. And what I often suggest is look at the best reviews and the worst reviews. And that often gives you a good like benchmark, what people really loved and what people disliked. I remember household brand that people say, wow, it's super to have a recipe book, for example. And that really makes it, and okay, why don't we add that? Because that's like a point of parity where, okay, we will need to have that to compete with the others. So I think that's a great example. I've got a couple of other questions.
I hope I answer that okay. I mean, it's definitely hard when I'm not seeing the brand like live.
So the website is obaby.co.uk.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
I have another question. Can you provide tips and tricks on how a more luxurious brand can stand out versus mass market brand, especially on Amazon? Within the same org.
Okay, within the same organization, meaning they have different brands on Amazon, is that what they're saying?
Yeah, it's so I assume it's like a company with several brands and some more consumer and some more luxury brand. Like,
yeah,
there are big groups like that with and even medium groups with an entry level, a medium level, and a high level, let's say, or luxury products and like more consumer products. How does the luxury part, you know?
I think if you have if you've got different brands, you're going to have to come up with, I guess, different stories for each one, a different narrative, because obviously they have different end goals and they're targeting different audiences. But in terms of luxury branding, I would definitely say it's not my area of expertise. I've worked more with supplements and children's products and kitchen and all that kind of stuff. Luxury is, there are people that's what they spend their life doing, is working with luxury brands. But I would say one thing about luxury brands is that when it's regular products and regular brands, you want to say everything, not everything, but a lot of times you do go into details about the products itself. But when it's luxury, sometimes you have to craft some kind of message where from the first look at the product, people understand that this is luxury. So they don't spend hours, you know, when you go on Gucci or you go on Louis Vuitton or you go on one of these websites, you go on, they don't have long product descriptions. They have one sentence about the purse because they don't need to say anything else.
Less is more.
It's implicit that it's a luxury product and that, you know, just trust us, like it's really good quality. So I think when it comes to an Amazon listing that's more of a luxury product, I think keeping things minimalist could really work well with certain style of photography, certain style of imagery that conjures up this feeling of luxury for people. It just reminded me actually of a story. There's a brand in the US that was called, hang on a second, I'm like blanking. It was a very cheap shoe store basically, and their shoes were like $20, like less, like really, really cheap. And what they did was they set up a store with like gold entryways and gold shelving, and they had store assistants that were like really well dressed, and they invited everyone in and helped them, and they had this whole launch day, and they invited influencers, and they were selling $20 shoes for up to like $400, and they videoed people asking them, like, as they were buying, oh, like, what do you think of these shoes? Like, wow, these are amazing. And it was all about, number one, the price. It was about the feel of the store. It was about the way that the workers in the store communicated with the customer as well. And it all created this whole illusion of luxury. So in terms of whether or not it's actually a luxury product or not, it's about creating that illusion for your customers and making them feel that it's luxury. So that comes down to the way you write the copy, the way that you do your style of photography, and the way you basically put everything together. Yeah.
And so in this case, if it's one brand with a luxury brand, and so a luxury side and a sub-brand or org, and another part which is more consumer, let's say, and they're all on Amazon, you would create two type of identities or two types of stories. What would be?
Yeah, I would definitely, if they're not in the same actual Amazon store, then definitely I would create two different stories, two different sort of plans and guidelines for the brand and how they behave online and everything. Yeah.
Okay. And so we've got other questions, I'll get to them, don't worry.
Sure.
But it's like, if we go into a more operational basis, how do you do then, how do you display the brand's equity on Amazon? It's like you talked about, pictures, you talked about A+ or EBC, enhanced brand content, and you've got the brand store, right? So how do you assemble that puzzle a bit? Where do you use for what?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I mean, let's say you craft your About Us sort of big, long brand story. I would say put that on your website. You can even create a page on your Amazon store that's your About Us page, because really your Amazon store acts like a kind of like a website, really. So you can definitely make a page about that. Then you can break that down into smaller parts, create like a shorter version of your brand story, put that on your EBC content, because nobody wants to read the entire sort of narrative. I mean, unless it's super engaging, but I think just taking short parts, putting that into the EBC, putting something on your packaging, like when it arrives, that people can read. It could be inside the product, it could be on the box, but having a micro copy on the packaging is really powerful also. That could actually be useful for the luxury brand. But So breaking that down even more is telling then the micro stories within the product description as well, which is, I like to do this where you create a description that really kind of just segues into what the customer is experiencing at that moment as to why they would be buying it. And it goes back to also customer journey mapping, is understand like where your customer is on their journey. And I think once they arrive on Amazon, they're ready to buy. So they're not super interested necessarily in your listing and reading your entire brand story. They're looking for more of a solution to the problem, or they're looking for pleasure, or they're looking, or they just, you know what I mean? They're not, but when they're sort of looking at content on the internet, let's say whether it's a blog post or it's an email campaign or it's social media, they're not necessarily ready to buy. They're on a different part of the journey. So you need to be telling your story slightly differently than when it's on Amazon itself, I think. Yeah, I hope that helps. That was kind of like a long answer to breaking well things done. Down. But no, you have to be very strategic, yeah, about where yeah. you're using all your content and how you're using it.
So for me, I had this image of the funnel. Basically, you've got the blogs, basically your website, then maybe the brand store. So, and then you go to the product page and the EBC yeah. or A plus content, where you're really focused on the solution for people to buy instantly. On the brand store, you're giving a bit of the story about yeah. the product, but you're probably also focusing on like good the deals of the days and stuff like that. And then up again, you've got the website about the full brand story, and then yeah. after you've got blogs.
But I'll tell you what, like in terms of the A plus, sorry. Basically, like I was researching for a product the other day, and it was actually for it was for people who do podcasts. And so I was looking at all different A plus contents, and one of them was and they were all basically going into the features. Oh, it comes with the muffler for the microphone, and it comes with the extra cable, and all the usual features, but everyone's saying the same thing. But one of them had on the A plus content, empowering content creators. And I thought that was so awesome, because it's like, if you're a content creator, then you immediately just see, and that tells a story. It's a very, very tiny, short story, but it says, we are here to empower you. We're here for you. Not we're here because we have an extra cable and we have a special case and all these things, which are just kind of like, people will discover that when they get your product, but capturing their attention, like with these tiny, you know, micro stories, I think is really powerful. So yeah. Definitely, though, what you said, it's about like having that funnel and strategically using the storytelling in all the right places.
Yeah, it's about a bit the features and benefits. And sometimes people focus a lot on the features, like, wow, it's made of aluminium. Okay, who cares? No, right. It's super strong. It's robust. It will last 20 years. That's a benefit. And I think it's like all about making sure that the customer understand it and make it's super powerful in the terms of yeah. you're telling
it. I also don't think people should forget about the features, because sometimes the brand story is about like a specific feature that they are amazing at. So don't brush that. Like, I think that there's no like hard and fast rules for any brand. Each brand is going to be totally unique, and they're going to use these things that we're talking about differently. So sometimes, yeah, like focusing only on features is obviously a big mistake, but sometimes you do have features that you want to tell people about, and doing it in the right way is really the trick. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you're right. And like you want to use your features to ground your benefit, in a sense, like it's super strong yeah. because it's made of aluminium. So you have to have the feature, but it sort of comes as a backing to your promise. Like, I'm the best. You'll get a great musical experience because I've got 20 years of awesome technique in sound systems, for example.
Right.
So I think that's super powerful and true, that we can see as customers, we're much more engaged by the story than, and to be honest, I read an ad on a train station yesterday in Thionville, and it was about Perrier, which is a fizzy water in France. And it was a joke about it. They had caffeine in it, and they made a joke about it. It's like coffee, but actually it's not really like coffee. And it's like, I because it was a joke, because it was, you know, and you should, I was not excited by the product itself, but by the joke and by, I had a good 30 seconds reading it. And I think that's very powerful. So I have another question. Question is, how would you recommend if a person who wants to start a new brand, so food brand, of something which is already out there but isn't a big seller? the type of food better. Has big competition, so how to start and also increase reach and be a first choice. Example is a healthy snack, but people aren't going for it as it's either is expensive or a first choice.
Okay, that's a good question. For a food, it's a supplement, they said, or like a healthy food, like snack?
Healthy food, yeah, healthy snack.
Okay, I'm gonna think about that for a second, just so I can...
Do you want me to play music or something? Yeah.
So, no, it's cool. So, basically, I think if you're gonna create a snack, so there has to be something, like I said before, a character or a story or a name, naming. We didn't talk about naming, but naming is a big part of your brand also. Something that people will remember. Now, there's a brand on Amazon that they started. I don't know when they started, but they're called Undercover Quinoa. The branding shows like a kind of detective kind of character on the packaging. And it's super cute. And why is it called Undercover Quinoa? Because it's chocolate covered quinoa. So you don't realize that it's actually quinoa and it tastes like chocolate, but it's super healthy. And so it's thinking of those little, you know, ideas and inspirations from the product maybe itself, that like something that just really gets people into it and excited. So even if it seems boring, there's always something kind of interesting that you can find and that you can do. And then basically, like I did like some of their copy through a different agency, but I focused on this whole like undercover type of talking, and like it was actually really fun. It was very tongue in cheek. A lot of the stuff I wrote about, you know, just that they're super sneaky and, you know, making you healthy and all that kind of stuff. Offhand, I can't remember exactly what I wrote, but it was basically based off of the fact that they call their brand Undercover Quinoa. So it's thinking of something really super different, something, a character, personality, a name, a way to position your brand as something that people really want to buy.
And one question is, like, let's put ourselves in the shoes of the people listening to us. It's like, okay, cool, I need to create a story which is an inspiration. I need to take from my own history, the history of the company, why we did it. Okay, makes sense. But how do I get started? So what is it? Is it a post-it session? We all sit down and we put candles and low light, and, you know, what would you recommend as
a
process?
That's a great question, as a process. So, I mean, that's a good question. It really, yeah, definitely getting together with whoever your sort of stakeholders are in the company is a good way of doing things. I mean, some people are solo entrepreneurs, so it's just them and themselves. But looking around on, I think, the internet, because you can get inspiration. Like, you don't need to create something out of nothing. You know, you can take inspiration from things that are already existing, but put your own spin on it as well. But definitely sitting down and going through the reasons why you started the business, the vision, what value you want to bring to your customers, how you want to serve them, and how that's going to impact different decisions that you make along the way. But yeah, it's definitely a process that people can do themselves. I have like a whole sort of list of questions and stuff that I go through with brands when I work with them. And it's a lot of soul searching as well. I think that some of the things that people don't even think about, like, what's the real soul of the brand? You know, how do we want to be perceived online? What are some adjectives that we want people to think of when they hear of our brand name, you know? But I also don't think that these things happen overnight. It's something that gets built over time and consistently. Because when Nike first started, I don't know if you know, it was called Blue Ribbon Sports. Nobody knows Blue Ribbon Sports, but they changed the name. And then a couple of years after that, it went public and it became like this huge company. But these things don't happen overnight. And I think also people's brands change over time, and you get more sort of confident in your brand over time. And I'll tell you a personal story. When I first started doing this, I was on Upwork, just like a million other freelancers. That was the marketplace that I was in, you know, and I wanted to differentiate myself. So first I tried making my profile look really, really nice. And I was the top rated like one of the top reader copywriters. And then I said to myself, Sasha, that's not enough. You need to build your own website also. So I built my own website. And now I'm building a new website, actually, because I've changed over time. I've changed in the services that I'm offering people. I've changed in the way that I deliver my projects as well. And what I have right now doesn't really represent who I am. So it's a growth as well. So you can definitely think of things now. But then in a few years, you might want to come back to it and sort of reassess what you've been doing and see if it's working and see if you need to kind of change what's going on. Another example actually of a brand that I worked with was just a young couple, and on their packaging they had this story about themselves and how they were digital nomads and they started their brand because they wanted to provide solutions to other digital nomads. And then they grew, their sales grew, they started selling on all European marketplaces and they broke into the US market, and they felt that this brand story that they had wasn't mature enough for the brand that they'd grown into. And so then we changed it and we basically wrote more of sort of a bigger idea of providing these ergonomic and stylish textiles and whatever it was. So it wasn't about the couple that started it who were digital nomads, because they were like, well, it's not us anymore. So it doesn't happen overnight. It's building things consistently over time. And eventually what you'll see is that it's not your brand story anymore. It's the story that customers are telling about you. It's the stories they're telling to their friends about you, about your company. And that's what you really want to achieve. That's the main thing that you want people to say. When someone says to you, oh, what stroller should I buy? Or what crib should I buy, to their friends? And they'll say, oh, I want to buy from Oh Baby or whatever it is. So yeah.
Awesome. And I was saying to myself, when you started, I'm going to tell you a story about myself. That this little sentence, which usually you have in conferences, immediately my brain goes into, wow, that's going to be, you know, I'm touching something. And I think this feeling about making people interested and say, I'm going to tell you a story about myself. Like, everyone is aware, and that's exactly what you want to do with brand building, right? It's like, people want to say, there's something special, there's something authentic, there's something about touching about the soul of someone or a group of people. And I think achieving brand story for me is about that. It's like, there's something touch inside you, which is probably not right here, but
it's more around here, right? Yeah, definitely. And I think with brand storytelling also, it's not something you'll see results from on day one. It's something that you'll eventually see results from, you know, over time, because it's a long-term strategy for sure. And it's definitely something subconscious. And I think people need to hear it over and over again, or at least sort of see that story happening. Like they say, about a minimum of 8 times for them to kind of interact with your brand in different places and different ways. And I think more focusing on retaining existing customers is also a strategy that you can do as well. Yeah.
Awesome. And I have another question. And if anybody's got a question, questions. That's probably
love it. Yeah.
We have a few minutes because we try not to go over an hour. Samia just offered to have for you while she was thinking to have a healthy snack just to think about it. So everyone, just think about having a healthy snack.
My glass of water.
Yeah. Here comes the other question: is having a backstory the best way to go about it, or is there a better or equally good way to spread the word? Sorry.
Yeah.
Example: being sarcastic, cheeky, or things. Our ways, but that still result around a good story. So I think it's like, do you have to always look at very inspiring?
No, I'm so happy someone asked this question, because it's so important, because not every brand has this history. Not every brand has a backstory of to why they started. So there are a couple of brands that do this really well, where they just use humor and tongue in cheek. So I want to read it to you, actually. I'm going to get it up on my screen. It's called Whiskey River Soap. Have you heard of them?
No.
They're this ridiculous company. They sell really, really funny soaps and stuff. Like, one of their soaps says soap for the middle child. It's really funny. But their About Us page, or their story, says this. Okay. Whiskey River Soap was founded more than 14 million years ago on the outskirts of ancient Rome by a ragtag group of freelance gladiators, stray dogs, and art of work magicians. Apart, these charlatans were nothing but lazy, and it goes on and on, and it's a complete load of absolute hilarious rubbish. And it's part of their brand, though. That's the whole point of their brand, is to make people laugh. And they do that in every single thing that they do, in every naming and every product that they do. Another brand that does this really well is called Anatomicals. They're a UK-based brand that sells all kinds of soaps and stuff like that.
Business is quite funny.
So they do a really good job as well. So definitely just being, you know, being really funny, like, and just coming up with something that makes, there's nothing wrong with entertaining your audience as well. It doesn't have to be this whole, like, because that's an emotion also, making people laugh, and laughing produces oxytocin, which makes you, and dopamines and all these serotonin and all these good hormones that make people feel really, really connected. So definitely that's a great way of if you don't have a backstory, that's fine. You don't need a backstory. You need to tell a story of a customer story of how a transformational story of how you help customers or how you plan to help customers or, you know, something like that. Yeah.
It's probably about, if you're funny yourself or if you like to laugh and make jokes, probably makes sense. If you're not the laughing type, probably it's not a great thing to have a brand about, it's being super funny. So I think it's who you are and who are the group of people making that brand, or like, what are the different pieces, the products, are your product funny or not? Maybe soap is not very funny, so they say, okay, let's make it funny. It's that things go together, right?
Funny, like Old Spice, they did this with their brand. They were losing brand equity, they were losing sales because it was like the old man's brand, like the grandpa brand, and then they came up with this new strategy where they made these really funny adverts. And you've probably seen them where there's a guy sitting on the horse and they have all these really funny lines, and that totally like got younger people to start buying from Old Spice and seeing them as in a different, completely different light, because they used humor and they used that in their storytelling and in their advertising and in their campaigns. So that's just like an example of a brand that kind of was on one sort of, they had like this brand identity where they were like this, they were Old Spice, they were, you know, a deodorant brand. But then they realized they needed to make a turn and they needed to change. So brands can do that, but it's definitely that takes a big budget. What they did takes a bigger budget obviously than regular brands, but I think smaller brands can be more agile, they can be flexible about the way they do things, and if needed they can change sort of the way they've been doing things and do something different. There's no reason.
And actually, to your point, that will probably be our closing topic, is that I feel Amazon, like, obviously, if you're a big brand, I was talking about Perrier, which is a big national brand, Old Spice, like those big brands, obviously, they have big budget, they have billboards and stuff. But I feel Amazon enables every company to do his own story, right? And you have your website, so you can have your Shopify website and you have your story there, you have your brand store, you can, and you've got the advertising. So now you, like, even a small brand can be funny, can be fun, can have that emotion throughout their own page, right? Amazon gives you that.
100%. I totally agree with you there. Like, even, even very, very small brands can do this, because there's nothing stopping you from being creative. There's nothing stopping you from, you know, really defining and deciding who you want to be in the marketplace. And Shopify gives you so many tools as well to do this, sending out just emails to people. And I'll give an example actually of a brand that didn't have a big budget. This is a really famous story. It's called CD Baby. Have you ever heard of it? So they were one of the first music platforms where people could actually just buy, before iTunes came along, before this stuff came out. And they used to sell CDs because it wasn't digital back then. And they sent out this email that usually the confirmation email you get is, oh, your package has been posted, you know, it will arrive in 2 weeks. And they made this, you can look up the CD Baby email, but they made this hilarious email where they wrote how the CD had been taken off the shelves and a hush fell over the office and it was polished and put into a box and everybody cheered and we're all so excited for you to get your CD, like, and it was so funny. And that email was shared hundreds of thousands of times. It didn't cost any money to write an email, but it was so good that it was shared thousands of times, and it really just, the brand just exploded after that. And and it became like a study in like marketing of how powerful just like sort of one email can be. So you don't need a necessarily big budget. You just need to have creativity, good ideas, do things differently, and don't be afraid to take risks, I think, as well, which sounds easy for me to say because I'm not the brand owner. But I want to say that, you know, even as a freelance owner, as a freelance business owner, I have taken certain risks as well. And I have failed businesses that I've been through. And so I've seen things firsthand. Yeah.
And saying back to the beginning is for brands, go back to basics and to foundations is who are you? What's your main purpose as a brand? And what are you trying to achieve? And,
yes.
And if you don't have that, it's more difficult to be successful. Sasha, thank you so much. That was really great to have you today.
It was really fun to just kind of riff off about all the stuff that I've been doing. Yeah.
Exactly. So we'll follow up with an email with Sasha's contact details. Also, you can find her on LinkedIn. Also, if you if you want her contact details, please or connect through us and we'll share her details. Thank you very much, everyone. And I'll be happy to meet you again on our next webinar. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.